Hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It's been 2 weeks since Donald Trump is in the office as the 45th president of the United States. As a routine practice, with each new administration taking charge, certain changes are doomed to take place in American foreign policy. Such anticipation was particularly high under this administration because of comments made during the election cycle by then the candidate Donald Trump and steps that are taken since he moved into the White House. Obviously, a lot to be clarified, but based on what we know so far today, we will try to understand what awaits for Central Asia in Washington's likely foreign policy and what are the thinking, hopes and expectations in the region from the new administration. In the upcoming 40 minutes, we hope to bring some clarity to these questions. To do so, I am joined by Ambassador William Courtney, who, among many other posts, previously has served as the U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan and is currently Senior Fellow at the RAND Corporation. Ambassador Courtney, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you, Mohammed. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today. And from Washington, Reid Standish is with us, who is the Central Asia writer and digital editor at the Foreign Policy magazine. Reid, welcome to the Majlis.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you. And from Prague, as always, Bruce Panier is joining us, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. Gentlemen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. So as I said earlier, in the absence of clarity, we will be swimming in the uncharted waters today. While doing so, we have a lot to talk and a lot to learn on the go. So please feel free to amplify, expand or disagree directly with points other guests are making. Please don't wait for me to prompt you a question so that we have a lively debate today. Let me be flat here. Offering predictions about the Trump administration's future steps are a risky business. Still, this much is clear, that he won't be itching to engage with the world, including Central Asia. So, Reid, let's begin with you. What did you see or sensed in President Trump's likely policies towards the region, towards Central Asia, that you pinned down a long article on this?
You know, I think a big part of this is, you know, as we've seen with President Trump so far, and this is something, you know, he's branded himself as someone who wants to make deals. So, I mean, obviously, this is going to be a big centerpiece of his foreign policy. And, you know, we saw even in his inauguration speech, you know, he made a big point of talking that, you know, Washington didn't want to interfere in other countries' affairs. And, you know, there was also a comment about, you know, he was willing to turn old enemies into friends and friends into new allies. And I think something like that is particularly pertinent for the countries of Central Asia, especially as, you know, one of the few building blocks that we really have of what a Trump foreign policy will look like is, one, is this very narrow and intense focus on fighting Islamic extremism. And then the other idea, something else he's been quite consistent on, is the idea of trying to repair ties with Moscow. So I think both of these things are a cause for some pretty serious, well, I guess it's cautious optimism from the region. You know, things are still going to remain on a pretty transactional basis, is sort of what my reporting started to bear out. But I think that some of these developments could be pretty positive for those governments.
Mm. So we are kind of talking about the issues, not the region itself, I believe, here. So,
yeah.
So as I said, a lot yet to be clarified about this approach towards a specific region or the country. But as Reid was mentioning, so there are certain issues that President Trump thinks as a priority. So where does Central Asia falls in terms of those thematic priorities, Ambassador Courtney?
It's still early, Mohammed, to have a good understanding of that. What we've seen so far is that President Trump seems eager to improve relations with Russia. This has been a controversial issue over the last week. There were strong concerns expressed in Congress about unilaterally reducing sanctions on Russia. And so that has not happened yet. But we really haven't gotten to a situation where President Trump is addressing other areas. So what we've seen so far in President Trump's desire to improve relations with Russia is a question whether he might be willing to lift or ease sanctions unilaterally on Russia with regard to its aggression in Ukraine. If that were the case, then that would have troubling implications for Central Asia.
Bruce, would you like to jump in here?
I mean, I agree on that. I was hoping Ambassador Courtney would expand on that a little bit. I imagine he was thinking Kazakhstan in these terms. I will just briefly say that, yes, I read Reed's article, which I liked very much. And I do agree that there would be, I think that U.S. Central Asia relations under President Trump will probably have a very strong focus on security, especially because President Trump will undoubtedly be aware of where Central Asia is located simply because it's north of Afghanistan. I would not be surprised to see, although U.S. military ties with the region are still pretty good, I would imagine that those will even get a little bit stronger over the in the next couple years. The only hesitation I have with Trump's view of Central Asia is he also doesn't want, at least he has expressed the desire not to waste money, aid money, and things like that, on governments that don't seem to either the money vanishes or they don't really seem to have much appreciation for what the U.S. has given them. And Central Asia is a notorious region for taking aid money and then it just kind of vanishes into people's pockets, and you're never really sure how much of an effect it really had for the people it was intended for.
Interesting. So we are talking about the kind of likely shared interests here. On talking about this shared interest, Reid or Ambassador Courtney or whoever wants to jump in, that's fine. So what are the likely shared interests? Bruce mentioned one of them to be a security. So what are the likely shared interests and potential avenues of clash in terms of interests going forward?
Ambassador Courtney, if it's okay, I can jump in.
Sure.
I would say, there's, obviously Bruce flagged Afghanistan, which is undoubtedly, that was a big issue of engagement and security cooperation following 9/11 and, former President Bush's war on terror. The situation in Afghanistan is still, quite unstable. There was a report that just came up this week from John Sopko, the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, who was sort of warning that, things in Afghanistan are not really looking up at the moment, and that this could be a big crisis looking forward for the Trump administration. The other area is actually Iran, I would say, could be a big thing. We saw this week, Mike Flynn, Trump's national security advisor, came out and said that, Iran was being put on notice. And we're not exactly sure what exactly that means, but, we can't hurt about there's a new round of sanctions that are being placed on the Iranians. That's something that, people like General Mattis, the pick for defense secretary, is also quite hawkish on Iran. So, I think that's something that could be quite negative for the Central Asians because, especially Kazakhstan, I know that that's something, they played a pretty modest role in bringing about the Iran deal, but, that's, it took a lot of pride in having that, and they certainly have a major interest in not having a large-scale war in the Middle East, especially one that would involve the United States and Iran.
Ambassador Courtney, if you want to say anything about the shared interest and potential issues of conflict, that is fine. Otherwise, Reid mentioned the interesting point on Iran, so I have some question on that.
Okay, let me mention two aspects of shared interest.
Sure.
For the quarter century since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the West and the United States have strongly supported the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of all of the new republics of the former Soviet Union. That has been consistent from the first President Bush through President Clinton, the second President Bush, and President Obama. That is a shared interest because all of those countries want to maintain their independence. Not one of them is showing any interest in being annexed to a neighbor. So that shared interest, I believe, will endure. A second aspect of that is Caspian energy. Again, for a quarter century, the United States and the West in general have seen Caspian energy as an important new source of expanded energy supply, diversified energy supply. So there's been a lot of strong support for enabling that energy to come out. Some of it comes out through Russia. Some of it goes out through Turkey or directly to the Black Sea through Georgia. I believe that interest will sustain itself. So both of those are quarter-century-old shared interests.
I keep my Iran note somewhere here, but Ambassador Courtney, you raised another interesting point about the Trans-Caspian or the possibility of Central Asian energy flowing to Europe has been something that Central Asia wanting for a long, long time. And U.S. was supportive of that aspect, but there was one enemy to that project, that was Russia and Iran. So, in the current circumstances that we are talking about, Trump administration might have a softened approach towards Russia. If that is going to be the case going forward, do we have an improved chance of that Trans-Caspian-like project happen?
It's important to put the concept of a Trans-Caspian pipeline in perspective. Right now, a huge amount of oil comes out two ways and a smaller amount a third way. One part of the oil comes out from Tengiz in western Kazakhstan through the Caspian Pipeline Consortium through Russia to Novorossiysk, and then it's put on ships and sent out. A large amount of oil comes out through the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline through Georgia and Turkey. And then a smaller amount comes out directly from Azerbaijan to Georgian ports. So the Trans-Caspian pipeline has really never figured prominently in the energy policy so far because, frankly, it's been difficult for U.S. And Western oil companies to work with Turkmenistan. And, of course, Russia has not agreed on demarcation of the Caspian Sea.
So do you think the possibility of a better relationship between the United States and Russia might play some role in making that, you know, long-standing project happen?
I do not think so. That would have to depend on a change in approach. Right now, for example, Turkmenistan is really not allowed Western oil companies to operate in Turkmenistan to any great extent. I think up until at least recently, they weren't even allowed to have offices in Turkmenistan. Mm-hmm. So the idea of a Trans-Caspian pipeline is really not a high priority, not even a medium priority for the West, whether previous administrations or the current Trump administration.
Bruce, you know, we are talking about this energy, and we cannot avoid talking about that because that is what Central Asia is known for in terms of, financial resources. Now here in Washington, D.C., you have a man who is a businessman and also happened to be president. And then you have a Secretary of State who is not only a businessman, but the one who knows a lot about the energy. Do you think Washington's policy towards Central Asia might likely be energy-focused, energy-driven going forward?
That's an interesting question. One thing we always got to remember with any of these energy projects in Central Asia is none of them directly benefit the United States. So I suppose under the America First principle, it wouldn't be a huge priority on Trump's list. It's going to depend a lot on how much value he places in some of these alliances with Europe, because really Europe is where we're hoping that this gas and oil all ends up to help diversify their import sources, especially keep them from becoming too dependent on Russia. It's really going to be a matter of how much of a partner he wants to be with the Europeans. That said, we've mentioned Iran in this equation, and I think that even if the U.S. relations with Russia do improve to the point where Russia would not object to the pipeline being built, we know that Iranian-Turkmen relations are suffering a bit of a setback at the moment. And I don't think the Iranians, it would be hard to convince them that that pipeline would be in any way in their interests at all. So I would imagine they would continue to oppose its construction. But following up on that a little bit, Turkmenistan might gain a little value in the fact that it is on Iran's doorstep. So I could see a Trump administration possibly trying to get better ties with Turkmenistan simply because it neighbors Iran, and it would be a place where the U.S. could get a little bit more information on what's happening inside Iran, although the Turkmen government, as Ambassador Courtney pointed out, has been extremely reluctant to let in any kind of foreigners, certainly Westerners, and that's for business, let alone geopolitics. So it would be hard to imagine that they would do that, but I could see the new administration maybe trying to get better ties with Turkmenistan, one, you know, to so they could watch Iran, but also Afghanistan, which Turkmenistan borders.
Whether Turkmenistan will be ready for such a cooperation, that's another question. But again, before we go too far from this, let's deal with this Iran topic. Maybe, Reid, you can jump in here. So when you talk about the President Trump, you cannot ignore his tweets. So before I was coming to the studio, I just saw another tweet which deals with the Iranian subject. Let me read this. He says, and I quote, "Iran is playing with fire. They don't appreciate how kind, President Obama was to them, not me." So Iran is definitely heating up in Washington's foreign policy. What does it say to Central Asia, considering that there were lots of hopes recently and expectations with Iran joining the international community? The question is open for you, Reid and Ambassador Courtney, so feel free.
Sure. I think it's quite ominous for the region. And I mean, that could create a lot of instability right on your borders, which, none of those five countries have any interest in having any more of. And I think it also opens up some kind of contradictory and interesting things that'll be to see how they play out in regards to the broader rapprochement, if it ever happens, between Russia and the United States. I mean, you know, Russia has put itself as a backer of Iran in Syria, and they've been sort of tacit allies on the ground. You know, Russia played a part in bringing about the Russian or in the Iranian nuclear deal. And so I think that there be interesting to see how the Trump administration plans to square repairing relations with Moscow with be coming down very hard on Iran and potentially even tearing up the Iran deal, which is something which has been talked about before, but we don't know if that's actually going to happen. So I think in general, this is, you know, on the one hand, we're kind of alleviating a bit of insecurity in that there, you know, a geopolitical conflict between Russia and the United States and Syria, Ukraine might be being alleviated, but it's actually could be going towards, those forces could collide in Iran now.
Mm. I would share Reid's perspectives on the Iran dimension. It's not going to be easier for Turkmenistan if the U.S. and Iran have sharper relations. But again, internal politics are so important, as in Turkmenistan, which we've discussed, but also in Iran. The situation in Iran is one in which the leaders were disappointed after the nuclear sanctions were lifted following the Iran nuclear deal, disappointed that Western investors did not rush in there. But Western investors see Iran as having high political risk because of its hostile policy toward the West in general, and the U.S. in particular. And then also there are Western sanctions with regard to Iranian terrorism, which also raises political risk in the minds of investors. So in both cases, as far as the West is concerned, you know, there's not a lot of incentive to engage in a positive way much more than is taking place now. Politics in those two countries really need to change. There's no lack of Western interest in having better relations with Turkmenistan, but Turkmenistan and Iran are really not allowing better relations.
Mm. Now, talking about this regional players here, there is another country, China, very important. Now, unlike Russia, President Trump's approach towards China is apparently tough, and China is already a major player in the region. So where does this put region's potential engagement with Washington or Washington's own approach towards Central Asia, should it choose to strengthen it, Bruce?
Actually, I would say that this is probably something that the Central Asian governments could benefit from. You know, they want to keep a balance between the big three, the U.S., Russia, and China. And of course, we know that most of those governments are going deeply, deeply into debt with China at the moment. And so it might not be such a bad thing to see what they can do about playing off, you know, if they have bad ties with China, they can kind of lean a little bit more toward the U.S., knowing that the U.S. under Trump is going to be a lot more hardcore in its views on China, you know, just to kind of shake China up a little bit. So they could work to their advantage, I suppose, if the Trump's policy, as it's been articulated so far toward China, follows through. But yeah, I guess that's where I'll leave it.
Let me offer a thought on that. Sure. You know, some of those who have supported Trump's foreign policy approach have made the argument, the United States and Russia should improve ties in a new form of triangular diplomacy to counter China, you know, the opposite of what Nixon and Kissinger did before. Russia's not really going to be a reliable ally for the West on the one side. But secondly, Russia is going to depend a lot on Chinese purchases of energy from Russia, on Chinese contributions to improving transport infrastructure between Europe and China. And then both China and Russia have similar views about having spheres of influence, if you will. So for the Central Asian countries, they're kind of caught in between. It's really not good for Central Asian countries if the U.S. has harsh relations with Russia or harsh relations with China. I think the Central Asian countries want the West to stay there to help them balance the competing influences of Russia and China, but they don't want there to be harshness of policy that could make their situations more awkward with respect to either one of their giant neighbors.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty I agree wholeheartedly on that. I mean, I'd say another thing is, I mean, I can't imagine there being, you know, if the U.S. wants to turn Central Asia into, you know, a big area of competition with the Chinese, I mean, I think that that's a sign that relations between Washington and Beijing elsewhere have gotten pretty bad. You know, that's generally, you know, when it comes to Central Asia, the U.S. has tried not to prob the Chinese too much when it comes to, you know, they're invested in infrastructure and putting money into the region, which I think is something that actually, you know, to some degree has benefited U.S. interests. So I think if that happens, you know, that means that the Trump administration is willing to really come to blows with the Chinese. And that's a sign of we're into some maybe larger worries than just what's happening in Central Asia.
You know, the Russians and the Chinese both are interested in spheres of influence. The Russians, of course, would like to have a sphere of influence in the former Soviet states. The Chinese would like to have East China and South China Sea seen as spheres of influence. But the Trump administration thus far, according to what they've said, they are a little bit contradictory in the sense that they want to go easier on Russia but tougher on China. Well, for example, if going easier on Russia means that the Trump administration would consider Ukraine to be a neutral or bridge country, as some have advocated, well, that could have deleterious effects for other former Soviet states, wondering how much the United States would help them. But on the other hand, if the Trump administration is going to be tough on China's sphere of influence, then there's a contradiction in that policy, and I don't think the Trump folks have worked that out yet.
There is one project, Ambassador Courtney, which was started during the Obama administration that kind of enables United States directly engage Central Asia, and that platform is called C5+1. What's the future you see for that project going on under the Trump administration?
That's really uncertain. You know, that came only at the end of the Obama administration. Secretary Kerry met in New York and Washington with the foreign ministers, and then Secretary Kerry went to the region for meetings. It's too early to tell what that policy will be. We just don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay. So far, we've been talking about Central Asia from Washington's perspective. Let's switch this site and look into all this from Central Asian mirror. What are their thinking? What is their hopes and expectations? And more importantly, why should Trump administration be interested at all in Central Asia? We will continue discussing all these questions shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today we are discussing likely strategy of Trump administration towards Central Asia and what are the thinking in the region towards the new administration. To discuss all these questions with me are from Washington, D.C., Ambassador William Courtney, who, among many other posts, previously served as the U.S. ambassador to Kazakhstan and is currently senior fellow at the RAND Corporation. And also from Washington, Reid Standish is joining us, who is the Central Asia writer and digital editor at the Foreign Policy magazine. And Bruce Panier is joining us from Prague, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Oazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. Before to go to Central Asia, let's take a minute and think about this. If President Trump knows one thing about Central Asia, what that would be, Ambassador Courtney?
Well, certainly the importance of respecting the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity is probably the single most important. And this is not only because the Trump administration or the West in general is intrinsically supportive of those countries. It's also because the West does not want either China or Russia to act in an imperial fashion toward those countries, because that would likely be a prescription for permanent instability, potentially conflict, deaths, things like that. So respecting those borders, a key concept that underlies the United Nations Charter, the OSCE, the Helsinki Final Act, that's probably number one.
That was in terms of policy. Rita, let me go to you here. So when you say Central Asia, what would this remind Donald Trump, President Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, I think when it comes down to Trump, as we've seen with a lot of things when it comes to policy, it's come to his kind of personal connections, the people he knows, the people he's met, the people whose opinions he respects. So, I mean, on the one level, I would say from his real estate days, I know that there have been, you know, during the campaign, there was a lot of reporting about Trump's relations with, you know, businessmen, especially involved in Manhattan real estate from the former Soviet Union. I think some of those were people from Central Asia. There were some Kazakh businessmen involved in that. So I'm sure he at least knows where the region is and is aware and has met some people from there. But I would say when it comes to what's actually happening in the region, you know, he has two people in his cabinet. You know, we talked about Rex Tillerson earlier, who was the CEO of ExxonMobil. I mean, he obviously has, you know, from his background as an oil man, knows what's happening in the region in terms of energy and probably has a very intimate knowledge. And also James Mattis, who's sworn in as Secretary of Defense. You know, he was the head of CENTCOM. And so he obviously has some pretty acute knowledge of the security situation in the region. So, you know, he does have two people who are close and able to give him advice, who know the region quite well. But I think it ultimately comes to who has the president's ear. You know, this week we've seen there's been a lot of sort of infighting and jostling within the White House in terms of who gets to actually have a say on foreign policy. And we've seen, you know, Steve Bannon get placed on the National Security Council. And, you know, I don't think that that's someone who really knows the region particularly well. And he seems to be very concerned with Islamic extremism very narrowly.
Okay, Bruce Panier, looking from Central Asia to Washington. So give me one reason or a couple of reasons, if you can remember, you know, why President Trump should be interested in Central Asia at all.
Well, I suppose for the same reason that you know, the previous administrations have been interested in the region, really post 9/11 administrations, is because it is, you know, the proximity to Afghanistan. And you know, let's not, it's not just the U.S. That's, you know, solely interested in its engagement inside Afghanistan. We have to remember that, you know, prior to 9/11, the Central Asians were extremely concerned about the security situation along their border with Afghanistan. And to a great extent, that was alleviated from them once the U.S. inserted forces into Afghanistan. It's only been in the last couple of years that the border has really been a problematic area. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, they went from being so worried about it, they were willing to engage and, you know, join, and I'm talking Uzbekistan especially, was willing to engage in joint military exercises with Russia, including exercises on Uzbekistan's territory with Russian troops. And then, you know, with the threat removed, they were able to be, certainly they could breathe easier, but they were able to be, in Uzbekistan's case, a lot more independent from Moscow because the threat wasn't there anymore. As we know from previous broadcasts, the last couple of years have not gone so well in northern Afghanistan. So I imagine the Central Asians would like any help they could get with security, and they take from anyone that's willing to give it to them for the most part. Certainly Tajikistan is a great example where they have, you know, they're getting military help from China, they're getting military help from Russia, and they would appreciate anything they get from the U.S. also. So I would imagine that would be, that's probably going to be the centerpiece of the relationship between them, is that, you know, they don't want the security problems coming out of Afghanistan, and the United States is involved in Afghanistan. So this is one area of common ground, I think, where the relationship will probably get better based on that. As far as human rights and the things that the U.S. used to press a lot on in the 1990s, I don't see the current administration in the U.S. placing a lot of value on that. I think they'll be more likely to pursue it in terms of, for reasons of political expediency, they'd probably be far more focused on the security aspect.
Yeah, let's expand that topic a little bit. When it comes to Central Asia, besides financial interest, one of the main pillar of the U.S.'s foreign policy has been to support the democratic reforms and respect for human and basic rights and freedoms, and condemn any action by the authorities when they were in clear violation of these values. Now, title of your article, Reid, kind of hints to this question in a way that Trump presidency might be a good thing from Central Asian autocrats' point of view. Why so? Can you open this box a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, sort of the thrust of that is mostly just coming from this point of view that, I mean, the main concern of the Trump administration is going to be on security, especially around counterterrorism. You know, in the past, the human rights situation in the region has withheld relations, you know, prevented partnerships from becoming deeper, you know, and it's been a kind of a sore spot, I think. I mean, maybe Ambassador Courtney can talk about that a little more intimately than I can. But, you know, with that sort of no longer being concerned, I think that opens up the avenues of what this relationship can become between these five countries and with Washington. I mean, I think especially this is more concerning with Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, who will be able to sort of reap the rewards of this more wholeheartedly. But yeah, you know, I think on the whole, the point of that is to just say that, you know, with human rights no longer being this concern, human rights concerns won't prevent a deal, to use Trump parlance, between Washington and a Central Asian country.
Let's bring Ambassador Courtney here. Do you share this concern? Yes.
Let me say, I agree with the comments that both Bruce and Reed have made here most recently. Let me cite an example. Let's take Ukraine and Georgia versus Central Asia. Ukraine has the advantage of being seen as a democratic country. It's had multiple free and fair elections with peaceful changes of power, and it has a large diaspora in the United States. Georgia also has evolved democratically, doesn't have a large diaspora. But in both cases, the U.S. Congress has adopted them as countries that deserve really disproportionate support. And again, we're seeing this recently now in the new proposed legislation by prominent Republicans and Democrats in the Senate with regard to what is called the Counter-Reacting to Russian Hostilities Act. Central Asia should pay attention to that, to develop the sustained deep reservoirs of support in the West, and certainly in the U.S. Congress. Evolving in a more politically open direction, more respect for human rights, is something that Central Asia really can and should do. Now, in the case of three of them, especially Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan, there are numerous human rights and other groups in the West that are strongly opposed to those countries. So to expect the Trump administration to go against the will of Congress and counter a number of NGOs who are in favor of human rights, political liberties, that's really not so realistic. You know, Congress plays a key role in a lot of these things, especially appropriations of funds. So if I were the Central Asian countries, I would take a look at what Ukraine and Georgia have done to win friends in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Reed, microphone is open for you if you want to react into...
I mean, obviously, I think that in general, on a lot of issues, Trump's foreign policy is going to meet a lot of blowback from whether it's in Senate or in Congress. But, you know, I do think, you know, especially we are kind of at a stage where we're reading the tea leaves a little bit of what a Trump foreign policy will. You know, one thing I think is if you look at, you know, Mike Flynn, in his book, you know, one thing that he talked about was in order to fight terrorism, the United States needs to do a job of what he called embracing friendly tyrannies. And in that example, he talked a lot about embracing these strongmen. You know, he used the example of Hosni Mubarak in Egypt or now with Fatah al-Sisi. So, you know, I think that there is sort of a template that at least in sort of ideology of the people who are in Trump's inner circle, especially on the foreign policy side of things. But I mean, the ambassador's right. If he does this, he could face some pretty serious blowback. I do think that there are some people in the Senate and in Congress who are in favor of the idea of embracing a security relationship with some countries in Central Asia. But, I mean, ultimately it comes down to we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So, Bruce, there has not been much of reaction so far from Central Asian leaders, at least towards what's happening in Washington, D.C. Did you come across with any? And what is the thinking? What are the expectations from the region going forward from the U.S. administration?
Well, you know, I mean, past the fact that the leadership of every one of the countries has sent letters of congratulations to President Trump, you know, I think this is a tough one for them because they are used to American party politics. politics as it has been for many, many years. And despite the fact that Donald Trump has won as a Republican candidate, he's still viewed, even by the Republicans, as something of an outsider. He's something different than the usual American politician. He's outside, really kind of outside the sphere of American politics. So, you know, it's not just the Central Asians. I think a lot of countries at the moment are trying to get a handle on exactly how much is he going to be like the presidents they've seen before, and how different will he be, knowing that he was not raised and reared in, you know, in one of the two political parties with which they're familiar with.
Right. So as we are approaching towards end of our podcast, let's try to end this with an optimistic note, if we can. After withdrawal of international troops from Afghanistan, value of Central Asia has clearly diminished, even under President Obama's administration. And also, there were areas where, in terms of U.S.'s foreign policy towards Central Asia, that we criticized as a journalist, and there were areas where Obama administration got some praise. So what is the lesson that Trump administration could or should learn from the previous administration's engagement with Central Asia, Ambassador Courtney?
Well, first, as several of our colleagues have mentioned, the United States developed reasonable relations with Central Asia before 9/11. No one had any idea how important those relations with Central Asia would become after 9/11 and the U.S. engagement in Afghanistan. So it's important for any U.S. administration to pay attention to Central Asia, not avert its eyes too much, because for unexpected reasons, Central Asia could become more important. Kazakhstan is particularly important because of the not only the energy factor, but Kazakhstan lies right in the middle of one of the more important routes between China and Europe and the Middle East with regard to the New Silk Road concept. That's quite important. Kazakhstan has been an outstanding international leader on non-proliferation issues regarding nuclear and other kinds of non-proliferation. So my guess is that Kazakhstan is still going to play a central role in U.S. foreign policy under President Trump. The other countries of Central Asia will probably play better roles if they can be important with regard to U.S. policy in Afghanistan, or if they can become a little bit more open politically and make some moves toward a more pluralistic political system.
Mm-hmm. Looking from Central Asia, so it's a kind of new administration and new beginning in Washington. So what should Central Asia learn from their previous experience towards the new administration in Washington, D.C.?
Oh boy, from their side. I think one of the things that they're going to have to accept is the fact that although the U.S. would enjoy very strong partnerships in Central Asia, that is for sure, but it is not going to be sucked in, for lack of a better word, sucked into the region that strongly. It's not, there's really a quid pro quo that's going on here all the time. The U.S. will be more engaged as the Central Asians show that they are more receptive to making some changes that bring it closer into line, which is still a long ways away, but at least a little closer into line with the way the U.S. thinks political and social systems should develop. Because, of course, our ultimate argument is the safest society is one where people do have the freedom to express their opinions. This is not fertile soil for terrorism and stuff if the people feel that their rights are respected generally. That they can affect some kind of political change if they wish. And so that's kind of that's our bottom line is, you know, if you open up your political system and behave, you know, in the way that we're accustomed to in the West, you won't have so much to fear from terrorism in your section of the country. But they're going to have to make some changes in their system. Otherwise, there's really not much that would interest America past, you know, some very immediate security concerns. There's no reason for America to have a long-lasting interest in these countries unless they're going to progress politically along the lines of democratic reforms.
Mm-hmm. Reid, final point?
Sort of to echo the Bruce and Ambassador Courtney, I mean, obviously, we all know that this is a very important and strategically vital part of the world where, relations with China, relations with Russia, energy security, Islamic extremism, all sorts of things sort of intersect here. And, you know, it's an important region. And, you know, it has sort of been engaged with inconsistently over the last 25 years. But ultimately, you know, I think under the Trump administration, I don't think we'll see any kind of immediate boom. But as we've seen in the past, you know, any kind of big changes, it's going to come from something happening outside of the region. And that's going to have to force some kind of engagement, whether we see that's coming to Afghanistan, Iran, Russia, or China.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Reid Standish, for your insightful comments. Reid is the Central Asia writer and digital editor at the Foreign Policy magazine. Also, big thanks goes to Ambassador William Courtney, who, among others, were the previous former U.S. ambassador to Kazakhstan, and he's currently senior fellow at the Rand Corporation. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi. Thank you, gentlemen, again, very much for your time and your thoughts on this.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all.
Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye.